Good afternoon.
Welcome to the program. Why is this a thing is the name of it. We do it every week. Some weeks later than others.
Yeah.
But I'm Nico. That's Nick. That's Adam. We are all remote this pod because I'm an idiot.
Yeah. Guess what?
It's okay.
Night show, baby.
Night show.
Yeah.
Woo. Working on the night show.
This one's going to be a disaster. It's going to be a train wreck, and I can't wait.
A beautiful disaster.
Yes.
A glorious train wreck.
I just want it all. You're getting me in a musical mood now. I'm saying a beautiful disaster, friggin' wild horses before the show, little Kelly Clarkson, little Stones, little Bob Seger.
That's an interesting lineup.
It's really,
I like that lineup.
That's my rock and roll Hall of Fame. Hey, yeah, I'm sorry. I just had a really wild weekend. And I just forgot that we were recording, frankly. That's all.
What happened? What happened?
Football, dude.
Besides football.
Well, no,
is that it? This happens every year.
Yeah,
football season, getting a high swing and just.
Yeah.
I mean.
Everything else falls by the wayside, you know?
Yeah, I guess.
I have given up on any semblance of a life. I've given up. And I am just in full on just like meathead, like frat house mode.
That's frat house mode.
My home might as well be a frat house right now.
I think frat boys do a little bit more with their time than you do.
Certainly. I had eight sweaty, gross guys. Just fucking the worst of the worst. Just bottom feeders. Like you wouldn't believe. Had them over on Saturday, and we played what was supposed to be two-hand touch football, but it turned into like slightly real football without pads.
Oh, God.
And we played a very scrappy game of basketball. And we did that for about 4 hours. And then we went inside and we drank and we watched football and gambled on it. And then I hurt. I hurt for 3 days. My body hurt. I was just.
From basically straight partying. That's what it sounds like.
Yeah, no, but it wasn't even partying. Like, it was fun, no doubt.
You sound like you're ashamed of yourself.
I am. I'm very ashamed.
Like you were whoring yourself out for the past 3 days. That's why we haven't seen anything. You're like Michael Fassbender from Shame.
Well, I wish. I was 25. I'm still 25 and I still live at home and I spend my weekends just playing football in the backyard and getting muddy and just coming close to punching my friends in the face. That's what I do.
Why do you insist on even bothering playing touch football, Nico? I hate to break it to you, dude. You're not exactly built for that.
You should have seen the block I laid out for my friend the other day. You should have fucking seen it.
Did you run any good picks?
It was. Oh, on the court. On the basketball court, on the fucking pavement, like. I run a screen like nobody's business. I fucking set a screen and I am just the Great Wall of China on the basketball court. But on the football field, like I laid a hit on my buddy Alex, and I wear glasses when I play because I'm stupid and I don't have contacts. Glasses popped off. They traveled about 5 feet, but not as far as Alex, who traveled even further.
Wow.
Destroyed him. Demolished him. And my shoulder was achy for a couple days, but the pride that I felt in the moment was really worth all of it.
Is that the most athletic you've ever felt?
I think so. I think so. Honestly, I think so. Sorry. So that's the long and short of it, why the podcast is late. That's all I wanted to say.
That's okay.
But we're here. We made it.
Yeah. Much coveted episode, it feels like.
Certainly. Yeah, this is something we've been talking about for a while. We are in Hodorovsky Hanuary. I need a stinger for that. I don't have a stinger.
Cue the music. Where's the... Oh, no.
I'll find one. I don't have one.
No.
But it's Hodorovsky Hanuary in celebration of the life and career of Alejandro Hodorovsky. And yeah, we're doing a movie called Hodorovsky's Dune today, and it should be exciting.
Yeah, not directed by Hodorovsky, but We will get there.
Yes.
This is this is such a weird level of conversation.
Oh yeah.
It's a movie, it's a documentary about a movie that wasn't made.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right. And we are discussing the director who was featured but did not actually direct the thing, and it's supposed to tie into a Dune conversation, and it's all very loose. I mean, all of the ties, all of the stitches that we have in between these various episodes are very loose and can unravel easily if you squint at them too long.
But, sounds like our podcast in a nutshell, though. It's okay. You know, if you think about it too hard, it just doesn't work at all. It just doesn't work. We got nothing. But
yeah. Basically what it is. But we have some business to attend to first.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
There's something in that guy's throat. What is wrong with that Paul? What is that?
Balls.
That's balls. Ball. He sounds like he's saying balls. Do that again.
Balls.
Balls. I really love how the clip ends with David Hoffner. That's my favorite part.
David Hoffner? Is he a Paul?
Yeah, you know.
I didn't realize that. Oh, guys, that's never going
to... Welcome to the Paul Draft. Welcome to the Paul Draft. Dave Draft Paul Edition. I'm sorry. Dave Draft Paul Edition. Don't want to get that wrong. This is a thing that we've been doing now for a couple months, and it frustrates me to no end, but we continue to do it, in which we draft four famous people with a particular first name. This week it's Paul. Yeah. We're drafting four Pauls apiece in serpentine fashion, and we're going to let the Discord vote on it, and I got to tell you, I'm kind of fed up.
This is why we took a break. Nico was pissed.
We actually brought this up a few weeks ago, and Nico said, I need a break.
I do. Yep.
He said, I can't do this week. Let's take a couple weeks off.
Nico just hates losing. Like, really hates losing.
But you know what he hates more? Wow. Quitting. he doesn't want to lose. He wants to win, and then we're going to stop.
Damn straight. Damn straight.
That's totally going to happen. Oh, God.
And for that reason, the Discord will never let me have my victory, but that's all right.
This could be it. This could be it.
I mean, just bear in mind, a vote for Nico means the Dave draft ends, and a vote for Nick is $2,000 stimulus checks.
That's, ooh.
So...
This is a great point.
You know, you guys pick. It's your choice.
It's very tempting, both directions, I would say. So we did this thing back in, I think, October. We started with the inaugural Dave draft. Adam won that thing with a ridiculous lineup of Daves that I didn't think anyone cared about, but someone did, and someone voted for Adam, enough people to give him that win. And then we have done, I believe, three since then.
Mm-hmm.
The Frank draft, the Chris draft, and the Nick draft, in which Nick won all three.
Yep.
I don't know how.
I've yet to win. Yet to win a Dave draft.
There's a little bit of... there's certainly some questions on mine and Nico's side. I mean, that's a lot of wins. I don't know. There's a bit of a community spiraling around Nick Evangelista, so...
We need an audit. We need an audit is the point, and maybe we'll get it.
Possibly.
If enough people... storm the studio this week.
Oh gosh.
Shut up. Stop, Nico. Stop it.
All I'm saying is you have to fight.
And just like that, our website just for some reason went off the air.
Yeah, all I'm saying is you have to be strong and fight.
Spotify scrubs us from the podcast feeds. We're gone. Just like that.
Fucking Bezos took down our server. okay. So I guess we ought to do this here. Who's going first?
This is tough. I think the correct order here, as usual, to whoever is most close to Paul, right?
Correct.
So we have Nick, Nico, and Adam.
Yes.
To me, Adam's most close to Paul.
Yes. And I think, happen to I think agree. I'm not just saying that my name is four letters definitively. Your guys' names technically are not. And I have an A.
It's a white guy name.
Yeah, that's ooh, you know what I mean? Great.
Like just
excellent
regular
point.
White guy. Like
sure. Excellent.
If you told me Paul
it.
Rudd's name was Adam Rudd, I'd believe you. You know what I mean?
I buy that.
And then in a sign of goodwill, I'm going to give Nico the second pick.
I hate having the second pick. Can I switch?
Yeah, if you prefer it.
I would prefer the third, please.
All right, you can have the third pick.
Yeah.
There we go.
All right. Because I don't love the first pick either, though. But I think in this case, I'm all right with it.
Well, there's some powerful players on the board here. Actually, lot more going on in this list than I initially thought. I thought it was going to be like
shocking.
I thought it was going to be like Paul Rudd and like Paul Muad'Dib. And that was about
Paul Muad'Dib gets drafted in this stupid
Oh,
thing.
We'll get there. No, you say that now. There is a
don't
good
think
chance.
You understand that the first pick is going to be like Paul Muad'Dib right
Guys,
now.
Guys, I'm not doing this again.
No.
I'm not going to do this again.
My first pick is not going to be Muad'Dib, but it could be, assuming Nick doesn't beat me to it. But yeah, I mean, there's two Pauls. There's two Paul Atreides
Guys,
character
stop
types.
It.
So.
Stop
it could happen.
It.
I'm just
stop.
Saying.
This is, I think, one of the most stacked lists we've had since the initial Dave list. I really think there are a lot of big names here. And we're going to draft 12 in total, and I think we're going to leave off a lot of good Pauls.
Yeah.
And I don't disagree with
that. I am telling you, the two characters who are actually the same person in Dune are not among the top 12. And if you two both do this, where I'm going to have to sit here and you have to explain to me the difference between Paul Atreides and Paul Muad'Dib. I can't.
He says it every time, Nick.
I'm going Muad'Dib. To shut it's, off it's the so computer annoying. And end the podcast. Okay? I'm not going to put up with this.
So my first pick is Paul Muad'Dib. Okay. No.
So my second pick, Paul Atreides.
Oh, no.
Did we lose him?
I think we did. He got so mad. Wait, is he back?
He got so mad he shut off his computer.
Nico, are you there? Nico! Oh, God.
Am I back?
I think you're back.
Yeah, I can hear you. I can hear you.
My thing froze, and you're a little staticky, but I think it's sorting itself out.
We thought you got like so fed up that you're like, you know what? I'm not doing the pod. That's it. That's all I needed. I'm done.
All right, so the order is going to be Adam, Nick, and then myself in the third spot.
Mm-hmm. I'm fine with
all right,
it.
Let's do this.
All right.
First pick, sir.
Yeah, Paul McCartney. I don't care.
Okay. He went chalk.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if there's any other way to go. Would you have not taken McCartney, Nick?
It's a great pick. It is a great pick. Here's the thing. I think on this one, I might just go with the ones I like the best.
Well, for me, Paul McCartney is certainly one of the ones I like the best.
I respect him the most, but I don't know if I like him the most.
Not my favorite Beatle, but I'd be...
Also not my favorite Beatle.
Yep, there you go. But I would be lying to myself if I honestly tried to make up the line he is not amongst my top four Pauls. It would piss off my mom and my dad tremendously, too. Most moms and dads.
Who's your favorite Beatle?
My favorite?
Yeah.
George.
I don't like that we have the same answer.
Oh.
I'm not a fan of that.
Yeah.
I low-key think All Things Must Pass, the Harrison solo album, is the best Beatles-related thing ever made. I, like, fucking adore Harrison, and he's also written, like, my three favorite Beatles songs.
While My Guitar Gently Weeps.
It is my favorite, it's and great. Something is also there, and, like, mm-hmm. I don't know, Here Comes the Sun's also great.
It's all fantastic. Like, but...
I hate this. I don't like this at all.
What? Am I not allowed to have the same favorite Beatle as you?
Is this no. No, you're not.
He's like the quietly brilliant one. Why wouldn't he be my favorite?
Oh, fuck off.
Come on.
All right, Nick.
Oh, what do you got?
Man, I really just thought this list was going to be Paul Rudd and a bunch of people I don't recognize.
Okay. No. But this is the thing. When I was doing my search, I had a similar issue where it's like, am I missing a few? Because I felt like my list was very, very short until Nico sent this in the chat. And I was like, oh, my God, I missed a bunch.
Yeah.
It was weird.
I mean, Paul Giamatti, we named a goddamn Wittati Award after him.
That's a good point.
I'm going to name a child after him.
Love Paul
The full
Giamatti.
Name, Paul Giamatti. Not just Paul. Paul Giamatti.
Yeah. We got Paul Thomas Anderson, Paul W.S. Anderson.
Bad pick.
Paul Simon.
Good pick.
Giamatti, Rudd, Paul Revere.
God. That one,
I'm actually
I don't think
not sure.
Well
I, like, I didn't look at this list before recording today. And so I haven't really had time to think about this. So I'm going to go just by the seat of my pants. I'm going to pick Paul Dano.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
I'm
going to pick Paul Dano.
I like that pick.
Because I really like him in everything he's in. Him and like Jake Gyllenhaal are like the two guys that like whatever they're in, I'm in. Whatever movie, I don't care.
Paul Dano, future Riddler. Get pumped.
I'm into that.
Sorry, Nico.
No, it's cool.
No, it's
not. I like Batman.
No, you don't.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm sure I would like heroin too, like if I tried it. There's such a thing as too much. I don't know.
That's true.
So I'm going Paul Simon.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think one of the five greatest songwriters that's ever lived.
See, I'm not into that classic pick kind of deal, you know?
What? That's a good pick.
It Paul is a Simon's good pick. A great, it's just not one I would pick. Ever do, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's okay.
I get the urge to like try to steal it from you, but it's like it's not faithful, you know.
And I know you're going to take Rudd, so I'm gonna play a little gamesmanship here, and I'm gonna take him first.
Okay. What is the Paul Rudd stock?
Adam, are you gonna take Rudd?
No,
I wasn't either.
No, I was just curious. Like,
where is he right now in the hearts and minds of America?
Yeah.
I think, I think he peaked at first Ant-Man.
Okay.
That's when his stock was the highest.
Yeah, but I still think he's a pretty reliable, like, I mean, like, you're still going to collect dividends every year, and I don't think, like, you're in any danger of losing your house.
I don't disagree with that. Certainly the best Hot Ones guest. So, I give
that's
him
a
that.
Good point.
He was.
I give him that.
Actually, that might be his apex.
There's something really, about like these really guys. Good. I know we've talked about this before, but these guys that are like they're comedians, but they're not that funny in movies. You know what I mean? But they're way funnier in real life. And then you have somebody like Will Ferrell, who's like everybody considers him like the funny guy in movies, but in real life, he's just a fucking bore.
A bore.
Yeah.
You know what exactly. I mean? It's just Paul Rudd's one of those guys though. He's hilarious in real life.
You can't hang out with Will Ferrell. No way. No way. But I would love to be friends with Paul Rudd.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Okay. That's my choice.
All right. Here we go. I'm gonna take Paul Muad'Dib.
Doing okay. It. God.
Yeah, I'm doing it. Is he actually on the list? Or did you write him down?
No, because I don't know how to spell his fucking name.
I was gonna go Paul Muad'Dib before Atreides, but you know. Hey,
well,
Paul
of course,
Atreides.
You have to go Muad'Dib before Atreides.
I know. But I would actually say they're close in terms of like in for fans of Dune, the name is sort of equally iconic. You know, when sure. Kyle MacLachlan was talking about his most iconic roles, he didn't say Paul Muad'Dib. He said Paul Atreides. So
yeah, he didn't understand the source material.
I don't think that's true. I just think it was a bad casting decision. Nico's come on dude who
we're
cares?
Talking about Dune today.
It's not
Can
a big deal.
This is terrorism that's what this is.
All right, Adam, pick Atreides.
What are we doing here, guys?
No, okay,
I literally don't know the difference between these two people. What's happening? Paul Muad'Dib is your next pick.
It's Nick's next pick. Yes, it's not my next pick.
God.
It's fine.
Paul Newman's on the board still.
Guess what,
you
Nico?
You know this.
Guess what, Nico?
Cool Hand Luke is on the board.
Nico.
What?
Paul Newman is my next pick.
Thank you. Fucking Newman's Own is on the board. And you're going with the second name of the main character of Dune, a movie that no one has seen, and I'm not sure many people will see when it comes out in October.
Who cares? Who gives a shit?
Because you know why? I'm the only one that has any respect for this game and is actually trying to win, and I continue to lose. And that's what's awful, is you two are messing around drafting fictional characters that Kyle MacLachlan played. In the second round, you're taking Wadeeb.
We care about these characters. Tom Brady was taken
in the fifth round. He's the greatest quarterback of all time. You're taking Paul Wadeeb in the second.
I think Paul Wadeeb.
At least save him to the fourth, dude.
I think he means more to people than your quarterback.
Also, you're assuming he'd be there till the fourth if I didn't pick him right now. Adam might have snagged him up. He got two picks coming in a row.
This is just poor planning. It's poor strategy.
It's actually not. Here's the thing. The bulk of Adam's picks are happening right now. I took him before Adam got two picks. If it was you picking twice, I wouldn't have bothered. I know you're not taking him. It was calculated.
Yes, Adam, who are you taking next?
Who am I taking next? Well, now it gets interesting.
Logan and Jake Paul are on the board.
Fuck.
Paul Ryan, Paul Manafort, Rand Paul, and Ron Paul are all on the board.
Jesus Christ. Paulie D.
Paulie Walnuts from The Sopranos is on the board.
No, you know what? No, I take that back. I want Paul at the end of Jimmy Neutron. Boom. That's no.
Hi, no. I'm Paul.
I'm Paul. I'm glad you pulled that up.
Come on. I'm going to go Paul Thomas Anderson.
Okay. Yeah. It's about what I expected. Mm-hmm.
Nicholas.
Oh, it's getting tough. I have to try to think here. What's Nico going to pick? He's got two picks coming up, right?
Yeah.
I think I'm safe. I'm going to take Paul W.S. Anderson here.
What?
What? Not Paul Verhoeven?
Nope.
What? What?
You're taking the director of Alien versus Predator with your next pick?
Yeah.
What? Wow. Okay.
What is Paul W.S. Anderson known for other than being the guy mistaken for Paul Thomas Anderson?
The Resident Evil films. That's about
it. I guess.
Yeah. That's it.
Paul W.S. Anderson.
Wow. Okay. He's rigged this, right? He's rigged this, Nico. Somehow that was the right move, and we don't understand it yet.
I mean, this is just baffling. If you win this now...
Yeah.
Huh. I'm scared.
All right.
I'm
scared. That's fine, such a... I guess.
Do you want me to change my pick?
No, I'm cool with it.
No.
If you guys want to audit the picks here.
No. It's just interesting. It's an interesting choice.
Paul W.S. Anderson, that is something.
Yeah. Not Paul Verhoeven, really.
God, Paul Blart would have been a better pick than that.
Maybe.
Paul
W. Sanderson just put out a new movie called Monster Hunter, based off of the video game.
Shocker.
So there you go. Oh, I
really showing
I see
his range.
Doing.
Really showing his range there. You know,
that's what Nick is catering to the Monster Hunter fan base in our Discord. I didn't realize this.
Maybe I don't know what I'm doing at all.
Well, that's very likely.
Okay, these next two picks are actually pretty obvious for me. Giamatti.
Yeah. Okay.
Has to be done. I'm shocked you didn't play defense by taking him there.
Yeah.
And then we're gonna go RuPaul.
So you're not taking Verhoeven either.
No. RuPaul.
Interesting.
Icon. Her stock's never been higher.
Yeah, I agree.
It's true.
Nico has a good lineup.
Paul Feig's on here still.
Yeah.
Adam, better director, Paul Feig or Paul W.S. Anderson?
Paul W.S. Anderson.
Damn, dude.
Yeah, actually.
Shots fired.
Better director? Not a better writer, but better director, yeah.
We should note, by the way, that Paula's and Pauline's are available.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is Paul Abdul.
We could extend it to five Pauls if you want.
I tell you what, 15 years ago, Paul Abdul was like a prime pick.
Yeah.
Today, I don't know.
I don't really know what she's doing.
Yeah.
Nothing.
I have.
Oh, wait, isn't she on The Masked Singer? Like, judging for that shit?
Yeah. I think I saw her on a commercial. I've never seen an episode of The Masked Singer.
I saw one just the other night for the first time, and the Masked Singer that they went with was Bill Nye the Science Guy.
Wow.
It was great.
I feel like I know more about The Masked Singer than any show I haven't seen a second of. Because it's on the commercials play all day long. I'm inundated with trailers for this thing.
Well, you see one trailer and you know exactly what the show is within like 3 seconds.
But I feel like I'm always hearing like, yeah, Dionne Warwick was on The Masked Singer.
Werner Herzog on one.
No. No, but it's kind of weird because, like, you're right. They'll take Bill Nye the Science Guy and he'll get eliminated the first round. But he is competing against, like, you know, Gladys Knight in the monkey outfit. And it's kind of strange because, like, you would never put these two people in a singing competition against one another. But the second you put a funny costume on them, like, it's totally fine that Neo is competing against, you know, freaking Dave Coulier. But that's, like, it's just very strange that they turn that show into a competition where there are winners and losers, even though, like, the winners are usually Motown superstars and like icons of music, and it's very strange that they have a fucking wizard outfit and they're and no one knows who they are. I don't know.
Yeah,
I just think it's a weird show.
Stick with The Voice, I guess. I don't know.
I just don't know how that thing exists. It's very strange.
Not the weirdest show ever.
No,
it's no Gong Show.
No, it's
oh,
not.
Oh man, my last pick is going to be Aaron Paul.
Okay.
All right, bitch. Magnets.
And that leaves Adam to clean
one
up.
More pick for me.
Yeah.
Yes.
So go ahead. And
Paul
pick
Atreides.
Jake Paul. No. Oh, Paul Atreides.
Paul Atreides.
There it is.
We're sorry, Nico. I love that character. What do you want? He's a fascinating character.
This is lunacy. I should have banned those two. I really should have.
All right, well,
here's the thing, though. We've agreed on the rules of having a supermajority, and I think Adam and I would have both.
Yeah.
We would have voted to keep it.
Yeah.
Who would your next picks have been? If Wadeeb and Atreides were off the board, who would you have taken?
Paul Revere.
Oh,
probably
boy.
Should be drafted. I don't know. I think you're right.
Paul Revere would have been my next one.
My
Walker
next one
would have been in the mix for me, I think. But what would you have said?
After me, Paul Reiser.
Sure.
Paul Reiser would have been my next one.
Also, I'm going to say this, all right? I'm going to say this. I think the Jake Paul stock is pretty high right now.
That is insane.
As far as the highest it's ever been, at least.
I mean, he made Nate Robinson his bitch on a pay-per-view. It was great.
I didn't pick him. Don't get me wrong. But
I think the guy is about as insufferable as any human being on the planet. But
all I'm saying is if we had 8 picks each, he probably would have ended up in my 8.
You want to go for 5 guys?
We're not putting okay. Do you want to go one more time?
Yeah, I'll add one more character. And yes, it will be Paul Reiser.
Okay.
Wow, okay.
Extend the rules. Let's have fun.
Okay. All right. Paul Reiser.
The only issue is that it's no longer really a Mount Rushmore, is it?
All good.
Okay. All right.
Where is he on this list? Is he on this list?
Yeah, he's there.
Oh, there. He spells it weird. I see. Okay. I'll pick Paul Revere.
Okay.
All right, Nico. You want John Paul the First or John Paul the Second?
Or the Apostle Paul.
You could have the Apostle Paul.
Do you know Les Paul was a real guy? Like, yeah. Les Paul was like a, he was like an actual guitar player and the guitar is named after him.
Yeah.
I thought it was just a model of guitar.
Really?
Yeah. I do love
that's,
Mr.
That's
Pauly
annoying.
Short.
I
find that very
I
find that very irritating. Nico, think about the name Les Paul.
No, I get it. I just thought like, it was like Le Paul, like it's like French or something.
I assumed nothing because I don't know anything about guitars or music.
But it's a name. It's like a name of a person.
Yeah, no, it makes
Paul.
Sense. It makes sense now. He was like a blues guitarist, this Les Paul?
Yeah. I have a lot of musicians in my family, so, I mean, I don't know, but still.
Yeah, my dad played the clarinet, so yes. He was a band geek.
Played with Woody Allen for many years.
Bettany, you can go, I mean, any of the basketball Pauls, although it means nothing to you, Paul Pierce, Paul Millsap, Paul George, Chris Paul. Pauly Shore, of course, comedy icon.
Yes.
How about
who's he?
Paul
who's
R. Nelson.
Comedy icon, Pauly Shore. Who are you going to go with? I'm curious.
I'm Paul R. Nelson, and I approve of this message.
That's my pick.
Vic and Paul,
Paul R.
Nelson?
Nelson?
Obviously. I have to.
You have to cater to the audience here.
I got to give the people what they want, and what the people
want.
That's
great.
I'm Paul R. Nelson, and I approve of this message.
They want Paul R. Nelson.
Is that Rob?
Might as well be. Like him.
Might as well be. Nobody else talks about it as much.
Oh, that's good. Who did we leave out here though? I guess Paul Rubens. Paul Rubens? Pee-wee Herman?
Yeah, we did leave out Paul Rubens. Wow.
Is not on there. Paul Greengrass, another director. Paul Schaefer, David Letterman's band leader for many years.
Paul Schrader, Pauline Kael.
Pauline Kael, of course, famed movie critic. Paula Lind, Dean. Longtime center square for Hollywood Squares.
Paula Dean, of course. Come on.
Yeah, her stock's a bit low these days. Good buy low candidate, though, I would say.
Sure.
By the dip with Paula Dean.
Yeah. You know, that's a different character. My bad.
Paul Bunyan, I guess he could have put in there as well.
I guess.
Yeah. We got, I think, some of the best ones. No Paul Walker, though.
No Paul Walker.
Yeah, I mean, he was in the mix for me, definitely.
Come on, Nico.
And probably should be here, but I do love me some Paul Walker.
Think about that last shot in Fast 7, dude. How can you do that to Paul Walker?
I didn't appreciate that he walked out on the last few movies.
Yeah, dude. Jesus Christ. That was not nice, Nick. Oh, God.
Yeah, no, one of the great weeks of my life was just binge watching the entire Fast and Furious franchise and then ending up in the movies for the 7th installment, which came out that weekend. And, you know, I began the week not knowing who Dom Toretto was. And by the end of the week, I was sobbing. I was sobbing uncontrollably in the movie theater. I don't think I've ever gone through more personal growth in 1 week in a 7-day span as I did the week that I fell in love with the Fast franchise. Okay, there you go. Paul Draft.
Paul's. I know. These are the Paul's.
Go to Discord, vote. If you're not voting for me at this point, you're an anarchist and you deserve everything that comes to you. Okay. Yeah.
Sounds good.
I think America is down with anarchy, dude. I don't know about you, but.
Well, these days. Yeah. Okay. Here we go. Hodorowsky January.
Yep.
This is a movie called Hodorowsky's Dune, and it's a movie that did not exist, has never existed, only in the brain and on the page of Alejandro Hodorowsky, who is a famed Chilean auteur who was around all the way in the late 60s, early 70s. Two of his movies we will be discussing later this month on the program, But this was supposed to be his big foray into the blockbuster space, into the science fiction space in the mid-70s. Obviously didn't come to be. However, in the years following, there were movies like Star Wars. There were movies like Indiana Jones. There were movies like David Lynch's Dune, which came out in the early 80s, that all, according to this documentary, were influenced by the work that Hodorowski did behind the scenes and in pre-production of this movie. The documentary essentially is digging through the archives, talking to the man himself, Alejandro Hodorowski, about the experience making this movie that was never made. And it's cool. It's from 2013. And I saw it when it came out, actually. There was a lot of buzz the year that it came out. And I enjoyed it. And I hadn't seen it in many years. And I rewatched it. And this was, I think, your first time seeing it, each of you. And so here we go.
Well, I saw it a couple months ago, you know, when I had, you know, finished up, the book Dune, and, obviously like still on a kick, but I wanted to start with this. I don't know why. I guess I could have started with David Lynch's Dune or the miniseries, but I just wanted to get this out of the way. And, yeah, I think this movie's absolutely fascinating, for a lot of reasons. I mean, apart from the fact that it's just a good documentary, but, just looking at like the creative process of something that you're trying to adapt and just how that can go like wildly off the rails, but in also like the best possible way, and how heartbreaking it is to see it not come to fruition. I love like thinking about the what if scenario of if this movie actually did exist. But at the same time, there's also a gigantic part of me as a, I would say, a very big Dune fan now. I mean, boy, would I have come out of that movie saying like, yeah, it's a hell of a movie, but I need a proper Dune movie.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So
it's interesting.
It's really easy. I guess I should start with, I do like this movie, and I do like the idea of Hodorowski's Dune, but it's really easy to sit here in 2013 and say, oh, this movie would have changed everything. It's really easy to say that.
Yeah,
I know.
And it's really easy to put out all these like big ideas and big names. But we've seen how even movies with very talented people can fall apart.
Yes.
There is no indication that this movie would have necessarily been like the best movie ever made, right?
No.
And
no.
Maybe to no fault of his own, right? This is a very ambitious, like high high sci-fi kind of idea in the 70s when this really wasn't done. Mm-hmm. Not sure watching this, like, you know, I'm not sure if in 2020 people would be flipping on the old 70s Dune.
I certainly don't think Disney would have purchased the rights to it and like built a theme park around the characters here. Like, I just don't think Alejandro has that sort of populist streak in him. And I love that about him. And I find him to be a very compelling figure in this documentary. And I love hearing him talk about film. And also, I love hearing him talk about his vision for this movie. But I do think you're right about that. Hindsight's certainly 2020. And it's easy to play that what if game. But I don't think there's any evidence to say that this movie would have been financially successful or would have been influential or would have been good, frankly. I don't think there's any evidence to say that other than, I guess, Nicholas Winding Refn being like, I was at a dinner party with Hodorowski one night and he showed me the book of Dune and he puts it in the most obnoxious way possible. And every time I hear Refn talk, I want to just gouge his eye out.
I feel like
he says, like, I'm
argument.
The only person to have seen Hodorowski's Dune and it's incredible.
It's amazing.
No, I don't think there is any evidence to suggest that, Nick. I think you're entirely right.
Yeah. But I would argue that the premise of this movie isn't necessarily that Hodorowski was going to make the best movie ever and it failed. I think that if that's what you take away from watching this, you're kind of missing the bigger picture, which is this is the most influential film never made.
Yes.
And I think it's pretty hard to argue with the fact that this movie definitely influenced things like Star Wars and, frankly, influenced Dark Star, another movie we watched.
Did didn't influence Darkstar. It influenced Alien, though.
Oh, you're right, because he saw Dark. Did he see Darkstar? Jodorowsky saw Darkstar. Brought on
Dan O'Bannon.
Dan O'Bannon, and this movie certainly went on to influence Alien, which of course is also a movie that many people say is a highly influential film.
Yes.
So
I was going to say, I don't think this movie would have been as influential in the way that Star Wars was influential, certainly. It wouldn't have like that populist streak that you were referring to. I completely disagree in the sense that it would have been insanely influential to filmmakers. And I think it would have had the same kind of influence that something like Blade Runner had.
Here's the thing. If he pulled it off.
Yes.
But here's what you have to – here's the way I look at this, right? He laid out the tracks for people to venture further out than they ever have with film. Mm-hmm. But if he hopped on those tracks and fucking crashed, people might have said, hey, let's not go that way.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
No, I think that's undoubtedly what would have happened.
And so I think he set the path for something like Star Wars. And when we say that, we don't mean that like in a sort of like, oh, like maybe this influence. Like, no. Okay. He fucking printed a full movie storyboard in a book form and handed it to every studio in Hollywood. And mm-hmm. every single studio in Hollywood for like the better part of a couple years had a copy of Jodorowsky's Dune. And they all looked at it.
I think that book itself cost $2 million. I think when all of the work on actually doing the costume design and all of the like the H.R. Geiger illustrations and the Dan O'Bannon stuff, I think that was all $2 million.
Right. And I mean, this movie was made to the point that everything was done literally except for the filming.
Right.
In terms of the preparation, all the preparation was there. Everyone had signed on to do it that they needed. Like the essential players were there, the writers, the
I think we hear Jodorowsky say who signed on, but I want to hear their side of things.
Yeah, I know.
And turns out a lot of them aren't alive to tell the tale. How convenient.
It's not the craziest thing ever.
Orson Welles didn't say yes to this. I'm putting that out there right now.
Orson Welles said yes to Transformers. I guess
because he showed up to a sound booth for like a day and a half.
Late period Orson Welles, where he just didn't give a fuck. He just wanted a paycheck. I don't know.
Orson Welles didn't say yes. I assure you, Orson Welles did not say yes. I highly doubt Salvador Dali said yes.
Okay, come on. No. You have to admit that Salvador Dali was on board with this shit immediately.
Are you positive?
This is so up Salvador Dali's alley, it's not even funny.
I want to see the contract that was like, we're going to give you $100,000 for every minute you're on screen. I just want to see if that was an actual agreement. Have you seen any
clips with Salvador Dali?
Yeah, he's a nut.
He's fucking crazy, dude. Do you honestly believe it's that hard to is it that hard to believe that he would have passed this?
Here's the thing, Nico.
I don't know.
According to this film, Salvador Dali was going to be paid $100,000 per minute.
Correct. Yeah.
He was only going to be in the movie for 3 minutes, but
mm-hmm. Right.
But that would make him the highest paid actor in Hollywood.
Sure.
So, yeah, he signed on to this. Like, artists, if you tell them you will be the highest paid actor in Hollywood, yeah, why not?
And they want their ego stroked. I'll meet you halfway with Orson Welles. But Salvador Dali, I don't think they even need to try to get him on board.
But let's mention some of the other names.
I just want to say this for a second. Like, this is something that happens all the time, though. And I do really like this documentary, and I think, like, just as a fan of the biz and a fan of like how the sausage is made, there were a lot of interesting nuggets in there for me personally. But I also think like projects get talked about in boardrooms all the time in Hollywood. And this is nothing like particularly out of the ordinary. You know, I guess the amount of work that went into the production design and the cooks that were brought into the kitchen were notable. But like you look at every project, Mank just came out on Netflix last year. It was in development for like 20 years and there were a million different stars attached to that role and they came and they went. And like, look at all the Star Wars projects that Kathleen Kennedy got directors for and then fired and then canceled and then brought back. And like, I don't know, this is something that happens in the big studio system every day. I mean, projects are bandied about and pitched and talked about over coffee and abandoned. And until you sign on the dotted line and show up for work that day, you haven't agreed to be in the movie. And that's all I'm saying about like Orson Welles and Dolly. Did Alejandro Jodorowsky at one point in time cross paths with Orson Welles at a cocktail party? Maybe. Probably. In fact, I'm sure he did. And did they maybe talk about for 5 minutes this idea of Dune, which is this heady 12-hour epic,
yes,
you know, based on Frank Herbert's novel? I'm sure the word Dune was brought up in the conversation. But I just don't think, like, you know, it's kind of like when you invite a friend over to a party. Like, I've gone through this a million times. You're like, hey, I'm getting some people together. And they give you the old maybe. Oh, that sounds fun. Like, until they're in the car on the way to your house, they haven't said yes to your party. We all have these friends. And Orson Welles is, by very definition, the guy that doesn't show up to the party. So...
Is like, I guess the part where I get away from that is that, to me, Orson Welles and Jodorowsky are very similar people in terms of their approach to art and the way they tell stories. You ever heard Orson Welles talk about Ernest Hemingway? It might as well come from Alejandro Jodorowsky's mouth. So, yeah, I don't know. All of these things are possible, right?
But I get what you're saying, too, because, like, I can imagine, you know, the amount of times I've been sitting and just talking with somebody about some idea, and we're all like, yeah, that sounds so cool. And then, like, you know, nothing comes of it.
Sure. Yeah.
And that's really what this movie's about, too. But it's, like, the most incredible version of that. And the star of it, like you said, is entirely Alejandro. And, I mean, yeah, but it certainly paints him in a way where it's, like, from my perspective, like, when I'm done watching this film, I can't help but be like, wow, I would have loved to have seen this thing get made. And I guess that's part of the point. So,
yeah. And I think that's fair. I think, like, that's one of the reasons why this documentary works, is he's an excellent narrator and he is a great teller of his own story, although he sometimes exaggerates the details. But I also think just the squad that he put together is an incredible list of luminaries. I just think it's a great Ocean's 11 squad. And that's like a lot of what this movie is. It's just, you know, scenes of George Clooney and Brad Pitt going to a backroom card game and recruiting a guy for their heist. Or Nick Fury showing up in like a boxing gym and there's Captain America, you know?
There is a bit of a nugget, though, that there definitely was something there and that this was more than just some small project. This was actually a serious project that people... smart, successful people seriously considered, because not only did he bring on a lot of big names, Pink Floyd was going to do the music for this, for example, right? That kind of stuff.
They're no Toto, but they're close.
They're close.
Yeah.
Close second.
and it was like right after Dark Side of the Moon, right?
Yeah. But he like also brought on a ton of people who were basically nobodies who went on to be somebodies. And I think that is the telling part.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That doesn't happen by accident.
No. Sure. It's very Dan O'Bannon, you mentioned, is the writer and star of Dark Star, which was John Carpenter's directorial debut. And he is working with the production designer on this movie, storyboard artist whose name I'm blanking on, Adam.
Mobius.
That's the other one I was going to mention with Mobius. He's also somebody who...
very influential.
Yes.
In the graphic novel scene.
And like a special effects guy. And like, I think they brought on O'Bannon after the dude that did 2001 said no, right?
Yes.
Right.
Which is crazy.
He's like, no thanks. And then here's this kid, Dan O'Bannon, who made like this quirky space comedy. Indie comedy, you know?
And this is corroborated with that Alien documentary that came out a couple of years ago, where they talk about this exact same story. It's sort of that documentary is honestly more of a Dan O'Bannon documentary than an Alien documentary. But they go over the sort of storied history with Dan O'Bannon and Jodorowsky in pretty good detail, and sort of about their strong friendship and where they were going until it ultimately came crashing down. So.
Sure. But the Mobius O'Bannon collaboration
ends up, as you just said, yeah, leading to Alien and then on and on and on. O'Bannon, an incredibly influential sci-fi figure. And then you also have, like, as you said, like a bunch of actors. H.R. Geiger, too, was also brought on.
Yep.
And H.R. Geiger worked on Alien with those guys. And yeah.
And his designs for the Baron's castle on Giedi Prime was that exact design ended up being used in Prometheus, actually.
Yes.
That's right. Fact.
So,
yeah.
Interestingly. Yeah.
No, it's fat. It's the fat alien is what it is.
Yeah.
It's a fat xenomorph. And he made that for Dune. And he ended up just slimming it down a little bit. And it became the alien in Alien. But yeah, H.R. Geiger. And before he was, you know, obviously he was a very popular and influential Swiss gothic artist. But this was his first foray into movie making. And of course, the rest is history there. You know, the alien creature, one of the, I think, most iconic designs of a creature in any movie ever.
It's great. It's great.
This is like when you read a book, right? And then we're all sitting here and we go, oh, let's cast the movie. We name the most like outrageous, like, okay, Brad Pitt is gonna play yeah. Scott Pilgrim, you know, whatever the fuck nonsense. This is that, but with a guy who's so pushy and charismatic that he just like makes it happen.
Right.
And he just like Hodorovsky, who is up until this point, he's made movies, but they're all fucking weird. I haven't seen any yet, right? But from what Adam says, they're insane. This man walks into Hollywood and just starts making demands. Right? I mean, that is essentially how I picture this.
I'm not kidding. Like you, like this conversation we're having right now is gonna. The context is strange for me because I've seen El Topo and the Holy Mountain, and it is legitimately baffling to me that Hollywood even let him walk through the door, let alone even like try to make a movie. Well, like I'm not kidding. You've never seen anything as fucking out there as the Holy Mountain, and this includes House and Manos, the Hands of Fate. I don't care.
I'm very excited.
It is nuts. And I can't wait to talk about those movies.
But this guy is like full of big, crazy ideas. And even Dune, here's a big question. Did he ever read Dune?
Unclear.
It's unclear if he ever actually read Dune or if he just got the synopsis from a friend and then rewrote it a little bit.
Yep.
Because his version of Dune sounds incredible, but it's also very different.
Very different.
And even different from David Lynch's Dune, which is also different from the book.
Here's the difference. No. Here's the difference.
Asking, you're asking about these two Paul Muad'Dib and Paul Atreides. There's six of them, baby.
Oh, goodness.
Because there's three. There's a movie that was made, a movie that was never made, and a book. And none of them are the same.
Right.
Yep. I'd love to see the Paul that was birthed from a fucking drop of blood.
Oh, God.
Oh, so I guess, Adam, my question for you primarily is, which Dune do you think you would have liked better?
It depends on what you're asking. Would I have liked it more as a Dune adaptation?
I mean, do you like Paul Herbert's Dune or do you like Hodorovsky's Dune? Nobody likes, unfortunately, nobody likes David Lynch's Dune. Except for Nico.
I mean, in terms of getting a Dune adaptation, if I'm going into the movie to get a proper representation of the book, I'd take the miniseries. That being said, there would be a very strong part of me that would have my similar feelings to like The Shining. The Shining has nothing to do with the book, but the movie is so good that I just don't care. Okay. And it would have almost certainly have been a situation like that if Hodorowski's Dune was not 12 fucking hours. So there's also that.
That's the other thing.
It's like, that's what? The other thing. No, I want to watch a movie. I don't want to watch an art exhibition for 12 fucking hours. I don't want to do that.
I mean, I guess now you would break it up. Netflix would just break it up into 12 parts.
Yeah, exactly. It's a complicated answer. I can't give a definitive this one or that one. Yeah, honestly.
Some of the ideas he was proposing, though, were incredible.
Yes.
And I want to sit here and be like, oh, he's so full of himself making like this like messianic figure. But I'm like, but no, that is Dune, like, already. I can't really fault him for like Paul being born of like the blood of the Duke, you know, because that's the shit. The story is already
the shot
like
in the uterus, in like the single take of the drop of blood.
But
moving
this story,
into the
like,
vaginal canal.
Frank Herbert's Dune is already like a biblical story. It already is.
Yeah.
So
I don't think Hodorowski understood any of the themes of Dune, like no. The underlying messages of like being fearful of your leaders and being critical of them and not trusting them. Like, I don't think he understood that whatsoever. And he didn't, frankly, he didn't care. That's the bigger point of it. Like, his idea of Dune was just the wallpaper of Dune, and I'm going to put everything else beneath it. That is totally and wholly mine. So it is very difficult for me to look at that and even consider it Dune. It's more of just his inspiration. It's like Jackson Pollock looking. Yeah. He looked out his window one day and boom, inspiration hit. That's what Dune was to Hodorowski, for him to make his own unique thing.
Yeah, I think to a lesser extent, it's kind of what Damon Lindelof did with that Watchmen series that HBO had a couple years ago, where it was like, I'm not really going to adapt the graphic novel. I kind of am, and I'm going to include some of the characters, and it's sort of going to be a sequel, but not really. It's really more of just like me riffing on the framework that was already built for me. And that's sort of what Hodorowski says in so many words. I mean, he describes raping Frank Herbert's novel, but that's a different issue. He's just like, I want to understand the novel on a spiritual level and just sort of riff on the ideas of the novel. And it's going to look like Dune, but it's really going to be my own thing. Now, who knows if he understood the book on a literal level, never mind a spiritual level. It doesn't seem like the man is always in touch with reality.
Just you wait.
Like, I'm interested. I'm definitely interested. Like, it's very possible if this movie was a thing and I didn't see this documentary and I watched it on like Criterion Channel on a Friday night, I would have shut it off out of frustration. I think it's possible.
Absolutely.
But I don't know. Movies, I think, are just always more interesting when you talk about them and then you see them and they're like, oh yeah, this is cool. But like, it's obviously not as cool as the pitch.
There is a certain community though that really annoys me, where, and it's mostly film Twitter, where they look at the Dune trailer that just came out and they're like, it's not enough like what Hodorowski wanted to do. And I just want to kill them. I'm just like, you fucking morons. I have no patience for you. That's the stupidest thing you could have possibly said.
Oh, I hate that.
I hate it. I've seen it. I'm like, what are you talking about?
I mean, you saw a couple sketches that were made on a napkin in the 70s, and now like you think you know what the movie would have looked like.
Exactly.
I mean, I think the doc does a very good job, and the director of this thing, I'm not sure if the director has made anything since Hodorowski's Dune, and I should probably get his name for you right now, but his name is Frank Pavich. Frank Pavich, and yes, has not done anything since Hodorowski's Dune in 2013. But he does a very good job of like taking raw notes and taking stuff just on the page and animating it and putting it to music and giving you the faintest sense of what it actually would have looked like. Now, you know, maybe he's not able to communicate everything that Hodorowski had intended, and like, I don't know. Some of this stuff didn't even sound possible in 1975 is the other thing. And the movie makes that very clear.
Yeah.
But he does, I think, as good enough job with the material that he was given to communicate the vibe of this movie the best that he can. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I just don't know if the movie would have been good. And I also think like this is a story that we have heard a million times over, about movies and projects being discussed and being bandied about and even getting a crew together, and then they just quit and the money isn't there. And who knows if it would have been anything like the novel is the other thing. It certainly seems not faithful. I'm going to go out on a limb, having not read the novel, and say that it's not faithful.
Very not faithful. I would say less faithful than David Lynch's Dune. significantly less faithful.
Yeah, that's insane.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not. I'm not convinced that the movie would have made sense, because Hodorovsky doesn't make sense.
Guys,
talk to him. He can articulate like vibe. You know what I mean? Like he doesn't even speak English. He's speaking a language that just articulates vibe.
He's Chilean. Yeah. Or Chilean, I don't know.
Well, okay, no, but you know what I mean? Like when he's saying words to you, I don't understand how the words make sense together in a sentence, but I get what he's going for. And like I feel like that's what his movie would have been.
Yeah. No, his sheer passion is what's kind of communicating it. And you just like right. like vibe off of that.
It might have been the, like The Counselor, where it's just like all meep and no fucking doesn't make any sense. Nothing comes together.
Well, here's the thing. I'm not sure he's ever made a bad movie. Like though every movie he's ever been made is like pretty critically hailed. And the ones we're going to watch are also critically hailed and for good reason. But if we're talking about like making a coherent movie, again, it just depends on what you were getting into Dune expecting. If you get in expecting Dune, you're going to be remarkably disappointed. But if you just go in having no idea what Dune is, it mm-hmm. could have been the most incredible film ever made, honestly.
Yeah, it could have.
Or the opposite. I mean,
or not. No. Just,
yeah, or the opposite. Yes.
Yes. Yeah, I'm not disagreeing with that. Who we knows? Don't know. But that's also, what makes it so fascinating.
I don't buy a lot of the movie's arguments that are like George Lucas stole the idea of lightsabers from Hodorovsky. I just don't buy that.
I don't buy that.
No, me neither.
Although, you know what I will say? The amount of times that I'm watching Star Wars content and I'm just going, that's just Dune.
Sure.
Like,
the episode one of Mandalorian season two, was like,
they're fighting sandworms. They're literally fighting sandworms in the Mandalorian,
right. with like people in the desert who are oppressed against.
Yeah. Also, Luke. These are the people. Character of Luke is Paul.
Yeah, more or less.
Like basically, you know.
Yeah. Sure. I also think again, only having a surface level understanding of the novel, and from what you guys have explained to me very poorly. I don't know if it really has that sort of like mass appeal in the way that Star Wars does. I mean, Star Wars is a children's movie, and it's always sort of been a children's movie, and the themes have always been pretty straightforward. You know, it's like good guy with a blue lightsaber fights bad guy with a red one. And like the bad guy literally looks like a Nazi, and there's not really much gray area. There's not much ambiguity, and there's not like a ton of like, you know, capitalist sort of like imagery or thematic stuff. And, you know, Dune is very dense from what I can tell. And I'm sure it's a much richer text than Star Wars. But I think like George Lucas is always like he's always been a crowd pleaser and has always targeted his movies at kids. And I just think like that material works in a theme park and it works when you're merchandising toys. And Dune isn't that. And I know like a lot of nerds want to reclaim it as that. And nerds are very sensitive when I bring up the word Dune. And Blade Runner is another example. Like guys like Adam are always talking about how Blade Runner kicked the whole thing off and it's the most influential. And that's all well and good. But there's a reason that Blade Runner didn't make a ton of money in its original run or when that sequel came out 5 years ago. And
they're
like,
very
I don't know.
Popular, though, dude. They're both actually quite popular.
Yeah, they're popular in your circles. I mean, Blade Runner 2049 bombed, dude.
No, but this is where I'm disagreeing with you, is that that's just not true. It's actually, you're not giving these movies enough credit. Just because
show me
you're
a
not
Blade Runner
them.
Toy. No, I'm not though.
I have Blade Runner toys.
We're comparing it to Star Wars.
But I'm not comparing.
That's
it
my
to Star
only
Wars.
Point.
No. You're comparing it to Star Wars. I'm not doing that. And that's a massive difference. That's like, dude, like, what are you talking about? It's not fair. Is my point.
I'm not saying that it's fair or not. What I'm saying is that there are certain, maybe you're not that nerd, but there are certain nerds that are like, Star Wars, fucking Blade Runner is where it's at. And I'm just like, Blade Runner is awesome as like a cult classic and a movie that nerds like you espouse the virtues of on the internet all day.
Mm-hmm.
But like, there's a reason why it's not popular, and there's a reason why it took 40 years for a sequel to get made.
And that's because it's a cult classic.
Well, it's market forces, that's, frankly.
Yeah, sure.
It's fair. It's has nothing to do with the artistic value of it. It's just purely like...
Yeah, that's not as accessible. I agree with that.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I'm not disagreeing with that.
There's a lot of resentment from... What I have read from you recently is there's a resentment towards the fact that Blade Runner is not more popular than it is.
Me?
Yeah.
I guess, but I'm not like necessarily surprised. It's popular enough for what it is my point. I don't get into something like Blade Runner saying, yo, it's a sin that it's not as popular as fucking Harry Potter. I don't look at that and think that it's going to be as popular as Harry Potter. It's too heady for that. Well, but for what it is, I think it's plenty popular.
I'm not even saying that Blade Runner is a worse movie than Star Wars. I'm not even saying that. I'm not making a qualitative judgment. I'm just sticking to the facts here.
Yeah,
the facts are that like audiences aren't clamoring for Dune.
I don't want to use the word derivative in terms of like, you know, this is. I want to use it in the mathematical sense, in the calculus sense.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Please don't talk calculus, whatever you do.
Sure, kids don't watch Star Wars, but the people who make kids don't watch Dune, but the people who make Star Wars have watched Dune.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
The people that matter.
In that sense. What did you say?
I said the people that matter.
Oh, right. That makes sense.
What do you want? No.
If it were up to Adam, only the people that mattered would vote in election.
Oh, shut up.
That's really what he... I mean, just if you want to... Just Adam in a nutshell was that sentence right there.
Yep. Oh, yeah. But there is truth to that, though. It's part of the reason why we need, you know, certain stories like Dune or like Blade Runner, you know, and just like... the level of inspiration they inspire to give you more things like Star Wars or The Matrix.
Yeah. I think this movie, like Dune, the story, I should say, falls into line with like a Blade Runner more than it does like a Star Wars.
See, the thing is, I might actually go a little further that Dune is even more popular than Blade Runner and stuff like that. As popular as Blade Runner is, I actually think Dune is, yeah, I mean, at least in the literary community, incredibly significant.
Maybe only because of the whole what it could have been factor is part of it.
Maybe.
I also think that they're in different genres slightly.
Oh yeah. No. And
Blade Runner is straight like hard sci-fi noir, and it talks about these themes about like what does it mean to be human and which are like very common themes now in any sci-fi.
Yeah.
Whereas like Dune is the reason people compare it to Star Wars is because it's the original, like, space wizards story. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
It's significantly less space wizardy. I mean...
The weirding way is just the Force, dude. I mean, let's be real. That's, like, the precursor.
I thought the weirding way was a gun.
Is it?
I thought it was a laser gun.
It's a gun. I'm sorry.
It's a gun, Nico. Okay, we're sorry. We can't... Nick, we can't. We gotta treat Nico like, you know, he just doesn't get it. He doesn't.
I'm a normie.
It's a gun, Nico. You're right. Good for you, Nico. It's a gun. Okay, let's move on.
Yeah, look, we'll see how popular Dune is. Actually, you know what? We might never know because it's gonna go out on HBO Max, and HBO is gonna play coy with the data, and we're just never gonna know how many people saw it. So HBO will just be like, smashing success. They'll do like a Trump thing. Great success.
No, here's how
you would not believe the size of the streams. We're not going to tell you how many people saw it, but just know there were a lot of people that watched it.
No, here's how you'll know is like 10 years later, Dune 2 is finally getting made. Then you'll know it wasn't successful.
Right.
That's the issue.
God. How it's awful that thing's coming out on HBO. Anyway. So, back to the list of names that were attached to the project, quote-unquote. We already mentioned Orson Welles. Mick Jagger. Was supposed to be the Sting character. How funny that they ended up casting another rock star in that same role. Another British rock star in that role, in David Lynch's Dune. But Mick Jagger was supposed to be in the movie. We mentioned Salvador Dali as the the father of Paul Atreides. Was that the role?
emperor?
Yeah.
Oh, that was the dude that like talked to the fish dude in the fishbowl.
No No, the dude at the very end of David Lynch's Dune, the old dude.
I don't remember.
Yeah, he's only in the movie for like 3 minutes.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know where else we would be able to describe this character for Nico.
Don't worry about it.
The fishbowl guy.
Not interested. David Carradine also supposed to be in the movie. That I buy. I buy that, yeah. David Carradine was signed on.
And he wouldn't have been a bad Duke Leto. I don't mind that choice at all. But the best one is Orson Welles, though, as the Baron.
Perfect. Orson Welles as the Baron. Yeah, I guess.
Flawless.
Evidently, Hodorowski's son was supposed to play Paul, although at the time, Hodorowski's son was only 12 years old, coming off of El Topo, where he was like 8 in that movie. So, I don't know. I'm not sure who would have fit the bill at 12. What do you guys think?
No.
Let's talk about this fucking lunatic right here.
Okay.
To prepare his son to be Paul Atreides, he started like signing him on to like martial arts classes.
Right.
He started like fucking, I don't know, maybe he was fucking drugging him or something. Trying to
sounds
get him
like
to
he might have.
Enter the Matrix.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy was breeding his son to try and be Paul Atreides in a way that it gave me the exact same vibes of like delusion that I get when I watch someone like Tommy Wiseau or Frank Dukes, like disconnect with reality. Like, you cannot train your 12-year-old son to be a fictional space wizard for your movie. There's a moral quandary here.
Dude, well,
wait till we get to El Topo.
Yeah, this is what I'm getting. Like, I want to talk about this so bad. Like, you have no,
because I know exactly what you want to talk about. But yeah,
because you're entirely right, Nick. But the only like half of the stuff he does in both movies are like, what is the matter with you? But the thing that separates him from the Tommy Wiseaus and the Neil Breens or whatever is that like he's a terrific artist and a really good filmmaker. So yes, he has all those same impulses and. In many ways, we should be hating him, but he's so charming and so good at what he does that he gets away with it all, I suppose. And yeah, you're going to double down on everything you just said when you watch both of these movies. Trust me.
Certainly, because I've read a lot about those stories the last couple of years. I won't even mention it, but
we'll get there.
Recently,
some
stories have resurfaced about what happened on the set of some of those movies. And,
I hope you don't like...
It might give you a different perspective on Harvey Weinstein. Let's put it that way. Maybe you might be thinking, this Weinstein fella.
Well, speaking of Weinstein, should we address the elephant in the room?
What?
The line that Hodorowski utters that we have so far very politely failed to bring up.
The fact that he was going to rape Frank Herbert?
Well... Yeah, that one. That's the one.
Oh, yeah, that one. I forgot.
Yeah, that one. Yes.
Little
the
head
one
of
that I had to pause, rewind, and bring Michaela into the room and make sure I didn't mishear this.
Here's the line. I was raping him, you know, like this, raping, but with love. With love.
That's,
it's the only way.
There's,
No.
Yeah, there's another word for that. That's a lot less aggressive. I sure hope there's another. I don't know. Yeah.
I guess
that
there's not.
That gave me bad vibes.
Let's table the rape conversation till next week. How about that?
Also, Nick, do you like animals? Do you like animals?
You know, I like them in very particular ways. I like some of them as food. I like some of them as pets, and I like some of them outdoors. That's it.
Do you like their safety and well-being used at the expense of a film?
Generally not. No, I generally,
oh.
generally.
Okay. Perfect. Then you'll be okay. You'll be more than fine. Okay. I'm excited. Can't wait, guys. I can't wait.
Yeah. Look, I think the guy uses flowery language, obviously. I think he just lies a lot too, is the other thing. I just think the guy lies quite a bit, which is cool, man. Like, artists lie.
I think he's one of those guys that believes his lies too.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Here's part of the problem, and you pointed out like the Tommy Wiseau thing. It is obvious to everyone in the room when you meet Tommy Wiseau that this guy's a moron. Mm-hmm. It is obvious. And it's obvious that he is not good at what he does, and like his eccentricities can only get in the way. They're not going to help anything. And so that's what happened on the room. And that's what's fascinating about that conflict, is that you had professionals trying to rein in this psychopath. Hodorovsky is in that weird gray area where it's like his eccentricities might be part of the process, and dudes in Hollywood will fall for that a lot. And maybe they should, maybe they're right to, but it's kind of like the Kanye West cult of personality thing. You know, it's like, oh, it's his bipolarness is actually what makes the art good. And I think sometimes they humor him to the point where he does some questionable stuff. But I also, actually not just questionable, just bad stuff. But I also think like he's probably exaggerating a little bit of it too. And he uses very flowery language. And I think like the rape metaphor that he uses in this movie to talk about raping a bride on wedding night, the way that he wanted to rape Frank Herbert's material. I'm not sure the metaphor tracks, but I'm sure like it makes sense in his head. And that's just his way of articulating what's an idea that can be communicated with less violent language.
I just can't help but think that even in the 70s, if he was in a boardroom with like Hollywood executives and he said that sentence, even they in the 70s in Hollywood would have said, huh? You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, let alone in 2013 on camera for everyone to hear.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, it doesn't make well.
I also think he would say it in 2020 without any concern.
Probably. I haven't seen his most recent films, which he's made a couple very, very recently, but I'm sure that language is used aplenty.
And it's not just the language. It's really not just the language, because language, whatever. You say a bad word or whatever, and it's like, okay, you shouldn't have said that, and it was poor taste, whatever. He didn't just use that language to use it. Like, it was evocative. He was trying to say exactly that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, no, he's definitely a provocateur. Definitely.
Oh, my God.
I think he's from that John Waters school of thought in a lot of ways.
And here's what I don't get, though. Like, this man is clearly delusional, right? Yep. And he's clearly eccentric, and he's clearly an auteur, provocateur. And generally, you line all of those guys up, and I hate every single one of them. But for some reason, I fucking like this guy.
Yep. Mm. And you'll be challenged with the next couple movies, and I still think you'll come out liking him, honestly.
I think he's just so charismatic
that
you just want to like him.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's what I was saying. You can't help it. By the end of it, you still love this guy, and you want to see that movie have been made.
Yeah.
You know, for better or worse.
And you do understand why somebody might be enamored by him. Like, Dan O'Bannon, he's dead by the time this documentary comes out, but they show some like footage of him or some audio recordings of his talking about like his first time meeting Hodorovsky, and here's this guy that walks in with this blunt, and O'Bannon starts smoking the blunt, and Hodorovsky seemingly at will is able to like turn his face into a kaleidoscope. And like, you know, of course some of these stories are exaggerated, but you also believe that when this guy walks in the room, like weird shit happens.
That's happened to me before.
No shit.
Many times, actually. Frequently. College, man. I don't know.
Anyway. Yeah. And I also did want to say this along that same train of thought. Like, none of these meetings happen the way that he said. Like, he talks about how like Mick Jagger was just at the same party as him when he was thinking about casting him in the movie, and it's like they ran into each other in Paris one time and they walked across the room and he was like, Dune, and Mick Jagger was like, yes. You know, like a lot of this stuff is obviously it, as I just said, it's the Ocean's 11, the Avengers Nick Fury thing, where it's like when you're putting the team together, you know exactly what building at what time a person is in order to recruit them for the team. You never call them. You never text them to make sure like they're available. Like, hey, going to be at the office today. When are you taking lunch? Can I like come in for 15 minutes? It's always like, I know exactly what back alley you're running your underground boxing ring in. At what exact moment, and I'm going to walk in just as you're kicking some dude's ass so I can recruit you for the squad. It's like just as you made good work. That's what's happening here. He talks about that comic artist, that the production designer, Mobius. He talks about going to his agent's office, and the guy just happened to be in the agent's office when he was thinking about him. Like, none of this shit actually happened. I do think a lot of this is artistic license. But I do think, as a sort of assemble the team story, it's compelling. And if you like movies, I think there's a lot to glean from this thing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's a wonderful, very particular look at the behind-the-scenes story. That, I mean, honestly, like we hear about the story a lot in the news, particularly now, like you referred to before, like with Rogue One and whatnot. But like, I haven't seen many movies specifically about this. And it's got one of the my favorite like caps to a movie ever, where he goes to see the movie he was supposed to make, and it's one of the greatest moments in the entire documentary by far. Right. I love it. Yeah. I love it so much.
So he does talk about Lynch making Dune, and he actually specifically says, he says David Lynch is a very talented man and he might pull it off, and he says that a part of him was really hurt because Lynch might pull it off.
Yep.
And then he sees it and he says, the movie sucked. And he goes, I was so happy. The movie was shit.
Yep.
That is such a human moment there. Like, seeing somebody just being so honest about like their want for someone else to fail.
That being said, though, he is very like forgiving in a way of David Lynch, where he's like,
oh, he doesn't blame Lynch either.
No, he blames the studio. He's like, that wasn't Lynch. That was the studio. Whatever that thing was, not his fault. So that was sweet.
Yeah, I loved all that. And then by the end of it, it's just Jodorowsky beating his chest, being like, movie have heart. Movie have mind. You know, doing this whole monologue. Look, this documentary is worth the price of admission just to see this guy just spewing nonsense about the nature of cinema. It is the perfect way to introduce what's going to be a wild month of podcasts, I think.
It's weird because it's nonsense, but it's not nonsense. It's like, well, when, at least for me, when I watch those movies that he made, I'm like, wow, yeah, it sort of expands my horizon on like what a movie can be, you know, and that rarely happens with just any filmmaker. It's like, yeah, I saw a good movie, but man, you haven't seen anything like this guy's films.
You guys have both seen Hugo, right?
I love Hugo. Nico does not like it. He just recently saw it.
First time a week ago. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
And you did not like it?
I was lukewarm.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. It has become my favorite Scorsese film.
Whoa. Cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
Did you see it recently too?
Yeah, I watched it. I actively was saving it for around Christmas time, and I watched it in December.
Nick has some of my favorite takes of anybody I know. Even the ones I disagree with, I just think you have fascinating takes.
Well, here's the great thing about Nick, is that he has not been formed in like the melting pot of film culture.
Yeah.
You know, in the way that we've just sort of been forged in this fire. And so
every top 100 best movies of all time list.
Yeah.
Disregard.
I've read every single one. I've read every list. And I don't have the balls to just color outside the lines the way you do. And I think that's lovely that you do that.
It's just pure. That's what I love about Nick's takes. It's just pure. And I love it. Nick, this is going to sound very weird, but I wish I could be more like you.
I agree.
I really honestly do.
I wish I could develop a hot take organically.
Yes.
Like, I wish every time I had a controversial opinion,
like it wasn't just trying to be contrarian.
Oh, this opinion's going to shock the world. You know? I wish I could just think it and then just say it and let everyone be shocked. Let the chips fall where they may. I am like such a psycho. I'm a robot now. It's that every take that I agree with, I feel bad about. And that every take that I disagree with, like, it's an actively, like, trolly thing.
Yeah. Now, Nick, I mean, I it does make me happy that this is Nick's favorite. It's not my personal favorite, but Scorsese has 26 films on my list anyway, not including some of his documentaries, but every movie that like really matters.
And it's not like I've seen every Scorsese film, yeah, but I've seen a sizable portion.
But Hugo is number 5 for me in my rankings, so that's pretty good.
It's definitely the most different of all of them, but I definitely like this direction of Scorsese better than the other stuff he does. Not that it's bad. I don't think I dislike a single Scorsese film that I've seen. No.
I dislike 2 Scorsese films. That's it.
But God, Hugo's so fucking delightful.
Yeah.
I just thought it was so boring. I really did.
You're a fool. Well, what I was going to say is the reason I brought it up is because George Méliès, right? Méliès. Yeah. And
George Méliès, yep.
Some French shit. but like in many ways, when we're watching those scenes in Hugo of George Méliès on set as a young filmmaker and like you have these quirky sets and scenes, and that's what I think of when I think of Jodorowsky making a movie.
Yeah, and you're probably right. Probably exactly right.
You know, and so if you've seen, for those of you who know nothing about Jodorowsky, but you have seen Hugo and you remember those scenes for like two people, the two people that sample size, you're welcome. There you go. There's an image for you.
But that's a great analogy. I think that's pretty spot on. Yeah.
That's great. I'm glad you guys like that.
Nico, you just don't like movies about the wonders of the cinema. You have come out on movies like
Hugo. I just rolled my fucking eyes, dude.
I'm shocked you don't like Hugo.
But it is a wonderful movie. It is so delightful and
dreamy.
I just
think it had no teeth, and it's just like there's no conflict whatsoever.
That's not true at all, though. It has a ton of
running
conflict.
Running away from Borat for 2 hours.
Sacha Baron Cohen's best role, let's just be clear.
Oh, stop it. He's awful in that movie.
No,
he's
I didn't
awful.
Say he was good. I said it was his best role. He's awful in everything.
No,
I just thought it was. I thought it was ultimately pretty weak sauce. I'm just like, if the best Marty has for a children's movie is cinema, it's so magical. Like,
yeah, it's the most wonderful version of that story, though. It's like the most effective portrayal I've ever seen.
Story he's most like equipped to tell.
Yeah,
and
me too.
It's completely unique. Mm-hmm. It's a completely unique story.
Absolutely,
for a kid's movie.
Doesn't feel like anything else I've seen.
Dude, they rehash all the same shit for kids' movies. And this movie, frankly, like, it talks about things that kids' movies don't talk about. It doesn't treat the kids like kids.
Nick, you're doing a much better job at talking about the film than I did.
Oh,
yeah, we got in a screaming match like 4 days ago.
That
was
so delightful.
Like, not litigating that ever again.
And you know what else? It manages to make a fucking modern viewer who's seen like Avatar watch a little film about a guy flying a rocket into the moon and it looks like shit, and I still look at it with fucking childlike wonder. How the fuck Scorsese makes me look at like a shitty silent film and go, holy crap, that's beautiful.
Dude,
I think that's a lovely sentiment. I also think half the movie is CGI. And I was bored.
It's not
the whole
though. It's
thing.
No. This is
yes,
bullshit.
It was.
No.
There's so much green screen.
There.
In this
it's mostly interior
movie.
Sets, and the green screen is used in the background, dude.
I would have loved. I would
have
loved.
Have you seen
if
the behind the scenes?
Used limited special effects, limited CGI, and was just like, let's tell this story about the beauty of practical effects. I think
it's
that would
not
been
about
great.
That. This is a total misunderstanding
really
of that era,
tower.
Dude.
He really
no.
hung off the clock tower. That no, kid was dangling for his fucking life. What more do you want?
Buster
that kid put
Keaton,
his life
baby.
On the line.
I mean, he's not
film.
Hanging from a clock tower, but it's a practical set.
No, yeah.
I hate this, dude. Those movies were all about special effects. And this
dude,
is just
of,
an
like,
extension of that. It's about the evolution of
that.
It doesn't,
flares
it doesn't,
that they put it in post.
It doesn't give
it's
a flying
gross.
Fuck about the practicality, dude. What are you
it's
talking
so
about?
It's so tacky. It's just so tacky. The whole thing just
no,
looks
it looks
tacky.
Wonderful. It looks
God, that
perfect.
Opening shot in the middle of Paris and they show the Eiffel Tower, it looks like a screensaver from Windows 10. Enough.
No, it does not. It looks like
just
something out of
Paris.
This like, beautiful
you're
picture
Martin
book.
Scorsese. Fly to Paris. Just go to Paris. Get the studio to fly you to Paris. They'll pay for it. You
this
made Goodfellas.
This is a nothing criticism. It looks great.
We should also unspoil your take that Hateful Eight is Tarantino's best film, which I think
which is another fantastic take.
Respect the hell out of it. I think you're dead wrong, but I respect the hell out of it.
Yes,
and I defend your right to say it. I love this take.
No, I just okay, yeah. So I recently watched Hateful Eight for the first time, which I think means I've seen every single major Tarantino film except for is it Jackie Brown?
Which one? Oh, Jackie Brown.
Yeah, it's the only one I haven't seen. Which I actually, okay. I'll be honest with you, I don't even know what it's about. I don't know anything about that movie.
I don't even know what it's about.
I mean, it's about.
I don't even know who stars in it.
It's about Robert De Niro smoking weed, I think. I mean, I don't like. It's not really about anything.
No. No.
Which is the great thing about that movie is it's not about anything.
It's kind of part of a trilogy for me. It's sort of, you know, I don't know why, but Reservoir Dogs, Pulp Fiction, and Jackie Brown feel kind of cut from the same cloth.
Yeah, I'm just looking at this
LA
cast
movies,
here.
Yeah, 90s LA movies.
I'm just looking at this cast, and I'm just confused.
It's a great movie, dude. I think it's the most underrated by a mile.
It is a dynamite cast.
Yeah.
And really by the way, movie. Everyone is unbelievable in it.
Oh, here's the thing, though. Okay, how much of people's opinions on Jackie Brown is just that font? Because that's a great font. I feel like that font carries the movie, like 70%.
Again, another great take.
You don't think so?
Like, I think it's low-key De Niro's best performance of the last 30 years.
That could be right, too.
I'm just going to put that out there. I think Keaton's amazing in it.
Mm-hmm.
Pam Grier, obviously, I think it's the best performance, and it's also, like, the meatiest performance of hers. Robert Forster, I think, got an Oscar nomination. Cool.
He did. Yeah, yeah.
Amazing in that movie.
Mm-hmm.
Who else? Bridget Fonda's great.
She is in that. Yeah, that's right. Sam Jackson's in that too. Did you say him?
Yeah, Sam Jackson's really good in it. Yeah, it's excellent.
Well, Sam Jackson, the person who's worked with Tarantino the most.
Yeah, yeah.
I think so, right?
What about Spike Lee?
Spike Lee?
I thought you were saying... I'm confusing the persons in my head. I thought you were saying like... People that Sam Jackson has worked with.
No. Yeah. People that Tarantino has worked with the most. I think Sam Jackson's the most.
Wasn't in Reservoir Dogs, wasn't in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and wasn't in Death Proof.
But he's in the rest, right?
In some form or another.
He narrates
Inglourious Basterds
and Kill Bill. He shows up as like the piano player in part two.
Yeah, I was going to say he's not in the first one, strangely.
But yeah, he's in Jackie Brown, he's in Pulp Fiction, he's in Hateful Eight, and he's great in Hateful Eight, too.
He is great in Hateful Eight.
Dude, yeah, really. that monologue in the middle of that movie is just dynamite.
Hateful Eight is so fucking good, guys.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's like, I'm watching it, and I feel like I'm watching a play, and I feel like I'm watching the best stage play I've ever fucking seen in my life.
It was almost a play.
It should have been. I actually kind of think it's sad that it's a movie. I feel like that shit should be on Broadway.
I would need to watch that Netflix cut.
I think it's a lot better. I actually think that if I watched the movie in one sitting, I would have fucking hated it. Because it is long.
I saw it in the theater, yeah. You did? Oh, wow. Mm. Yeah, I'm not totally sure it earned its length. As a play, it would have definitely earned that, though.
Yeah, I agree on both of those fronts. Yeah. And I mean, God, like... If it was a play, dude, I can imagine, like, the incredible set. And, like, the fucking bit where, like, it's cold outside and they open the door and everybody's like, close the goddamn door! And they shut it, you're like, nail it shut! You gotta nail it! And they're nailing it. You gotta use two boards!
But, like...
It's the funniest shit ever. And it's so made for, like, the stage.
Yeah, it is. Mm-hmm.
It's just... It's, you know, and I actually, like, and I told you guys, like, we were texting about it. I had those thoughts before knowing that. I did not know it was made for the stage. I could just tell.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, I think it shows some incredible range on Tarantino in a way.
Yeah, it's low-key his best script, too. I mean, there's just so much content, and there's, like, so much about, like, Confederate America and, like, the Reconstruction era and... all this stuff about like democracy and like the way that each character represents a different subsection of America and the class structure and race and everything. It's
and awesome. It kind of like by the end of it, what I love too is like it tosses like all of these bitter rivalries about race and class and all that's tossed out the window when somebody's trying to kill you.
Yeah. Mm.
You know what I mean?
The fact that it's those two characters at the very end that come together.
Yeah. They're best friends because you know what? Like, sure, we hate each other's guts, but somebody else is trying to kill us. And it makes you realize how stupid all that shit is. Like, how stupid all the hate is.
Yeah, hey, exactly. A movie we could use this week.
Dude, it's fucking awesome.
How do you like them apples?
Great movie.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
So that's Jodorowsky's Dune.
Interesting conversation. It's gonna get crazier, trust me.
Let's play a game. How many? Drew Carey. It's nighttime, so I have to keep the volume to a minimum. Not as spirited an intro as you're used to, but how many Drew Careys? I think we should pick somebody that was perhaps going to be in Jodorowsky's Dune, one of his collaborators.
Oh, Brontës. Brontës was just in Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, the sequel. He played Nicholas Flamel.
You don't want to go Jagger? You don't want to go Jagger?
Yeah, Mick Jagger's a good pick. I mean, you got Salvador Dali, right?
That would be a tough one. I mean, like, the Dali thing, it's like, now he's gone, and his art is certainly worth more than he was.
Yeah.
I just went into I went to Hartford and saw a Dali painting. Yeah.
Yeah.
We're talking about this. Yeah. Pretty great.
And we'll definitely never do him again.
Dali?
Yeah.
No. Did he ever act in anything? I don't think I mean,
so we couldn't do that. Mick Jagger's not a bad pick either.
Yeah, artists I just think are at least Mick Jagger's still alive and you can roughly estimate his net worth. I think that's probably the best way to go. Yeah.
I'm down for Mick Jagger.
Mick Jagger?
So Drew Carey is worth $190 million.
Ooh.
I'm going to assume that Mick Jagger's worth more. So my question to you would be, how many Drew Careys does it take to get to one Mick Jagger?
Okay. $190 million is Drew Carey again? I can't believe I still forget this.
Correct.
All right, I'm going Mick Jagger's worth about $500 million.
Okay.
So that's
2.5.
2.63, yeah.
Okay.
Hmm.
Nicholas?
Ooh, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to just fucking go for it. Fucking just, like, Hail Mary. You know? We're going to say... What's my math here? We're going to say four. Four Drew Careys to a Mick Jagger. Wow. Put him at 760? 760 million?
Your Hail Mary was not as big as mine. I'm saying five.
Wow.
I'm going to say he's close to a billionaire, if not a billionaire.
Wow.
Could be right.
Come on.
I mean, it's possible, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Can't get no satisfaction. When you're not satisfied, you just keep piling up those dollar bills.
Here's the thing. Like, it makes me think about how the stupidest shit can earn you so much money.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you could, like, develop a vaccine. You could develop a vaccine and save the human race. Or you could write a fucking song.
Did you just categorize the music of the Rolling Stones under stupid shit? Is that what you just did?
Not specifically Rolling Stones. I'm just saying, like, they're worth a lot more than the guy who made the polio vaccine. Like, a hell of a lot more.
I guess that's true.
Is that guy's name Louis Salk? Is that his name? Salk? Polio? I don't know.
That's my point. We know Mick Jagger, but we don't fucking know
his
that
net
guy.
Worth?
Because they don't make money, Mick. Like, Mick Jagger sells.
Jonas Salk net worth. Let's see what he's worth. $3 million.
$3 million.
Polio vaccine. Saved the world.
Mick Jagger, $4 million.
Drew Carey, for some reason, 60 times that.
Mick Jagger wrote Gimme Shelter, and he is worth $500 million. That means Adam, you hit this one on the head.
Wow.
And you just, or no, I'm sorry. No, Nick won this, hit this one on the head.
No, it was Adam.
Right?
That was me.
Adam got it. You said 500? I'm
I
sorry.
I said 500
you,
million.
You win. How many Drew Carries? There it is.
Oh, hell yeah.
Children.
Yeah, like think about this.
Polio it's just vaccine, a shadow way.
Polio vaccine versus the Drew Carey show.
How am
Why are we valuing one 60 times higher than the other?
How many Drew Carries to get to the polio vaccine? Is that what you're saying?
Okay. Well, this has been lovely, yes. Gentlemen. Thank you. Thank you very much. Hodorovsky Hanuary in full swing. Go to the Discord, vote in the Paul draft, choose one of our slates. And if it's not me, I disown you. but it's a new year. Maybe it'll be different in 2021.
Maybe. The
Dave draft. Maybe just runs away with same. All of them. All of them.
Do you know what my New Year's resolution is this year?
What?
I was going to talk about this on the other show, but I came up with this. Crush it.
Just crush it in general?
Crush it.
Ooh, okay. You need to do a lot of work, but okay.
Came up with that thing. January 1st, I got it. But you know what I said? I said to myself, this year you're going to crush it.
God, you sound like the worst inspirational speaker I've ever heard in my life.
And you want to know something?
I hate that ambiguous shit.
You want to know something? I've been crushing it.
Have you?
Crushing it.
All right.
Oh,
we'll see if that
yikes.
Pays off in the Paul draft.
2 cents radio, we're going to do tomorrow. Oh, Adam, are we doing the other show tomorrow? Is that the plan?
Yep, I think so.
Okay. So tomorrow we will be recording the Movie Hall of Fame, Class of Liam Neeson. Adam let me choose the topic, and that was what I chose, and that should be fun. So that's coming up in just a few days here on the site. As I just said, 2 cents radio, cultured, everything else, Fantasy Book of the Month, Nostalgia Plus.
Yeah, Fantasy Book of the Month, we actually have coming out probably sometime in the next 2 weeks. We had author Mary Robinette Kowal come on the show, and she wrote a book, Ghost Talkers, which we talked about also this month.
Interesting.
She's a very, very successful person. So she was very exciting to have on. She was very fun. And that was actually probably one of my favorite episodes we've done so far.
Wow.
So,
I might actually listen to that one.
Yeah, really, really exciting stuff.
TMT.media. Subscribe, rate, review on iTunes and Spotify. You know the drill by now. Yeah. What else? I think that does it. I think that's it. We'll be back next week with El Topo, right?
El Topo?
Oh, yeah. Oh, you better believe it.
Okay. And then the Holy Mountain.
Oh, God.
So the watch Holy those.
I am so antsy to get to the Holy Mountain, guys. Oh, my God. I can't wait. I can't wait.
Are those things on Criterion?
You know, I don't know. Maybe.
I feel like they should,
they should
be.
They should be.
Yeah. I got to maybe get a copy. Okay. Love you. Until next time. You guys have been so very, very naughty.
Naughty.